So this is it. There might be another episode before States. We don't know. If there is,
it'll be kind of light and fun.
It'll be a light and fun one. This, I think, is the episode that a lot of people might find themselves listening to potentially on the way down. I think for our usual weekly listeners, this isn't you, but I think there's some of you listening to this, but maybe don't listen to a lot of these, but you're on the way down. States is...
Well, hopefully they listen to it earlier because we're going to...
Hopefully, right? Yeah. But I think that we're, you know, like looking at the statistics for the last 2 years, this is one of those episodes that a lot of people listen to is the States episode, right? With good reason. I think this is the big deal. So like we're not going to touch on really anything else this week. This episode is all about the moment you've arrived.
We're going to kind of go straight into the deep dive this week.
Yeah, like I said, this is kind of the episode that all the other episodes lead up to. You know, this is the moment where if you've arrived at this moment and you want to start digging your hole now, it's a little too late. You know, I think fitness wise, correct me if I'm wrong, people are kind of at where they're at more or less, you know, like you can't cram for this. This is not a test you can cram for. There are things you could do to ruin it at the last minute, but,
yeah, there's types of fitness you can.
Huge asterisk, right?
Okay, yeah.
But the point, I think, you see the point I'm making, right? That we're at the end. This is where a lot of you have been thinking about since this time last year. A lot of you spent a lot of hours on Zwift and, you know, have made a lot of sacrifices in your personal life, all with the hope of a good performance at States.
Well, and let's first start with a little debate.
Oh, I like those.
Okay, because I notice you and I tend to call it States.
Yes.
And I've had people ask why we call it States and not State. Are people going to do State or is it States?
That's an interesting question. And I think my answer is that if I lived for a billion years, I could never find a reason to care. I don't know. Like, I don't really know. I think other people called it States when I was in NYCA, and I think in other sports, they call it that. It's not States Championships. That's my English teacher kicking in. It's State Championships. You do nationals. It's worlds, nationals, states.
I hear people say, but you're going to State. You're going to
States. I don't know.
I think our official stance is going to be...
I call it States.
We'll love you no matter what you call it. You can call it either one.
Yes, yeah. We will still be your bike parents and support you.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this is it. You know, I think I don't know if this is one or two topics. This is two very tightly woven, intermingled topics that we're going to talk a little bit about today. And this is kind of a version of an episode that we've done in the past. But I do think this is one of those episodes, especially one half of this topic, that you learn more about all the time, you know, that every experience you have in your life. And really, like, I think I'm going to talk a lot about what's happened in my life over the past year in regards to what we're talking about today. And what we're talking about today, I think, is a really beautiful tie-in for everything that we do, you know, or like the reason that I love this sport, you know, and that it makes my life better. So jumping right in. I'm not going to talk about any road races no one's ever heard about because this we want to give it all the time. Where do you even begin?
Well, so first of all, you kind of made the comment that, you know, and you always hear people when they're talking about you getting close to your A event or your peak event that, you know, the hay's in the barn, you're not really going to gain any more fitness. And that's true to some extent, you know, and, I mean, you're really not going to do a whole lot that's going to really improve your base aerobic fitness. I would say that there's definitely things at this point you can do to sharpen your fitness.
100%.
Or dull your fitness. You know,
1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do either one of those two.
It's never too late to ruin your bike race.
And then, you know, and what if, like, what if we talked about something that could make you, like, 1% faster? You know, I think a lot of the things we talk about are kind of maximal gains, you know, like training more and getting more hours. Well,
you guys aren't professional athletes. There's a lot of low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
For
a lot
of
low hanging fruit. You know, what if there was something out there that could get you 1% faster?
Sure.
Cause what, like, and I did the math real quick, you know, 1% on an hour race is about 36 seconds.
And those of you who are bike racers will know.
Yeah, like if someone's 36 seconds ahead of you, you probably can't see them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I think there's a lot of things that could still matter at this point and that can be important. And I think, I think some of the things that we're going to talk about today could potentially make a difference. So
yeah,
I've been super, super excited about it. So probably where I'd like to start is driving to the Richfield race this weekend. Amy told me, she's like, Dan, you give a lot of people pep talks before races. Will you give me a pep talk? And I was kind of shocked. I'm like,
Amy asked for that. Like, how deeply out of character.
Huh. I know, she has, like, and it's kind of funny with Amy. I never really coach her at all. Like, every once in a while, she'll be like, hey, Dad, I'm going in for a ride. What should I do today? And I'll, like, pull some intervals du jour out of the hat. And I'm like, go ride up and down Danish really fast or something, or, you know. But she really never asks for advice. And in fact, any time I try to give her advice, she seems to get kind of annoyed. And she never listens, so it's safe to say this. But so I was so taken back that she wanted advice. And I had been kind of thinking about this particular podcast topic for a while and learning some new cool things. And I was able to share some of those things. But first, I started to tell her a story about her older brother, Jacob, who is, as you know, the lesser known Draper brother.
He's the elusive. He's the rare one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you Jacob's story, then I'll tell you the advice I gave Amy later. But so Jacob's last NICA race was at Cedar City.
Yes.
It was state champs, or states, whichever yes. you prefer to call it. And before the race, I go up to him. I'm like, you know, Jacob, just go out there and just have fun and give it your all. And no matter what happens, I'm going to be proud of you. And he looks at me and gives me kind of a dirty look and goes, I'm going to give him hell. And then he walks away almost sneering at me. And I'm kind of like, oh.
Gave himself a pep talk.
Okay.
Your pep talk wasn't very good. He gave himself one.
I was realizing at that point I'm kind of a beta coach, but a
little bit. That's okay.
And I'm kind of like, oh, okay. And prior to this, you know, he never took his racing super seriously. He's always been a pretty good athlete with good skills and so forth.
The most naturally skilled Draper child, oh,
easily,
I think.
Yeah.
You know. But just never had the
never super competitive. Like he
no.
And his varsity racing was pretty kind of mid pack.
Yeah,
you know, like
I think
he did okay,
but I don't think it reflected his abilities as a rider, and I think that did frustrate him. That he knew he was, you know, that he's like I feel like I'm a better bike racer than this. Some of you will relate deeply to this. I think especially those of you who like, I think I had a bigger NICA experience than he did, and I think some of you are maybe like the younger sibling of a kid who went big on NICA, you might kind of feel like there's some expectation, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, he did fine. He was usually like 8th, 9th, 10th,
11th. Oh, he was
11th,
really good. You know. I think a lot of kids would kill to finish
yeah,
where he did.
Yeah, he was fine. But and so he basically kind of told me off with my failed pep talk to him.
Yeah.
And he was going to kind of do his own thing. And Jacob's always been that way, kind of does his own thing for sure. So the race starts, and I was in the feed zone. And at that time, Skyline only had a couple of varsity riders, you know, now that we've got like a whole bunch, but I think we had like three at the time or something.
Yeah. And three or four, somewhere
something
in that
like
range.
That. And so the varsity race at States has started and the first pack comes and I kind of was just like, I'm just kind of like, you know, you can see this pack of about 10 riders just cruising up the road. I just kind of stood back and all of a sudden Jacob rides by in that pack. His arm is holding out, like reaching for a bottle.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even there to give him one.
Cause he was also like not a good starter. I remember and like you really, especially didn't expect him to be there at the beginning.
Yeah. Right? I did not expect him to be in that.
Which is
top.
A great vote of confidence as a parent. They're like, oh wow, my feet isn't there because I'm usually not good enough to be.
Yeah. I figured you wouldn't be riding in the top 10.
Yeah.
There.
You were really reinforcing. Some,
yeah. He really yeah. didn't like me that day very much.
That know? Day.
So anyhow, he went on, like, most of his NICA races were lackluster. This last race...
I remember this.
...was unexpectedly good for him.
Yeah. Like, I think reflected his ability as a rider.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like he kind of finally had his moment.
Well, like, in a perverse way, almost, it's almost like all of his other races were a surprise. And this race was like, yes, yeah, that's, there you go. That's what I expected the whole time.
Yeah.
Right.
He had just a shockingly fantastic race. Like,
yeah. Huge improvement out of nowhere, especially at States where a lot of people kind of go the other direction. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so like my point in telling that story to Amy was like, you know, this is racing. Anything can happen. Good things can happen. Bad things can happen. You can have pleasant surprises. You can have unpleasant surprises. You know, it's just racing. Like, and so my point with that is just give yourself a chance, you know? And one thing about Jacob is he's one of the most determined individuals you'll ever meet.
Oh yeah.
And once he decides to do something, it's going to happen. Yeah,
get out of his way.
Yeah. And that race, for some reason, he just decided it was going to be his day, and he made it his day.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget my failed attempt at a pep talk for him. And
yeah,
he kind of put me in my place and
give him hell.
Yeah.
There you go.
But so that was kind of my story. I'm going to get to the advice I gave Amy later, but first I wanted just to talk about peaking. You know, and we've done podcasts on peaking before. I'm not going to spend, and we were going to do like a whole entire topic just on peaking alone.
Like this was kind of originally going to be two different episodes, basically, right? Two different main
topics. Yeah, but
they
just kind of flow into each other. And I just didn't really want to separate them. But we're just going to do kind of a review on peaking. And I'll admit, peaking is something I think I understand from a textbook type standpoint, but something I don't feel like it's kind of an elusive skill to master.
It's like something you can explain in the abstract.
I can't say my track record has been perfect, and I think I'm starting to understand why a little bit better, but just kind of as a review of peaking, my take on peaking is a lot of times when you hear about peaking, what people are really explaining is tapering.
Yes.
And I think peaking and tapering are two distinct things.
They're different concepts
that happen about at the same time, but they're two different things.
Right.
So peaking is, long story short, peaking is basically when you get to the highest level of fitness that you can maintain.
Yes.
The highest level of race specific fitness that you can maintain.
Right.
And so what peaking involves is, first of all, it's basically just planning your season so that ideally you can reach this peak level of fitness roughly about the same time as your most important event. That's kind of the concept.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. And it's not really like one day you'll have peak fitness. It's kind of a period of time that you're your strongest, and it
depending on who you are and how, where your fitness is,
yeah,
and how well you're being coached.
A week, it could be 2 weeks, it could be a month that you could kind of be on this peak. And the thing with a peak is it's a peak, you know, you've kind of hit, based on where you're at physically, there's only so much fitness that you can kind of, like race specific fitness that you can maintain. If you try to develop more, what ends up happening is you kind of go down the other side and, you know, if you kind of keep training past this point, you can get slower and overreach and overtrain a little bit. So that's kind of why they call it a peak.
Yeah.
So, with peaking, the bigger base aerobic fitness that you have, the taller your peak can be.
You say taller, like the more distinct it can be. Cause I wonder, like, it seems like maybe pros have sharper peaks where you're like, oh my gosh, for these 2 weeks, they were unbeatable, and then before that and after that there's like a distinct difference, where maybe for like me, I feel like my peak fitness is around a month where I'm like, oh, I've been right, I finally have more volume, my numbers are better. And this is just me observing. Do you know the science behind that? Like, are pros peaks more, because I can't imagine that a pro's peaking
pros
for 3 months, right?
I guess theirs are more robust in that you basically, a peak is just accumulating a whole lot of fitness. And, you know, it's kind of the analogy of the pyramid, you know, like the wider the base, the taller the peak, the more area is covered under that pyramid. So it's basically the bigger your base, the more fitness you can ultimately accumulate.
Because I've always heard the pros, people say like in the race commentary, like, oh, well, you know, we're only in the first week. He's really like wanting to hit his peak in the third week of the tour, right? That like, that's a pretty narrow window of time that they're claiming, at least, that they're going to achieve this like noticeable improvement in fitness.
And that's kind of the commentators too, you know, that.
Sure. And, right.
But yeah. So a peak is just kind of like planning your season out. So when it's, you know, kind of the most important point of the season is when you also have the most fitness available.
Right.
So, and I mentioned too, it's race specific fitness, and that type of fitness, that's the type of fitness where you start doing like VO2 max intervals, intervals above threshold. You really start focusing on that, focusing on racing. You're really focusing on the high intensity type work. And most people tend to really only be able to accumulate between 6 to 8 weeks of this type of fitness, before they start kind of getting stale on that kind of training and need a rest, you know? So ideally you're kind of timing it. So you're really concentrating on intervals about 8 weeks from your key event. And so, you know, at that point you're kind of, you know, you're really kind of well adapted to your specific high-end racing type fitness. If you do that for too long, you have the potential of kind of overreaching and kind of going over the other side of the peak. So a lot of a good peak is just really planning out your season wisely.
Right.
You know, you're not doing VO2 max intervals all season long, or you're probably going to have your peak when you don't want it. And you're,
this is what I was legendary at doing, right? Like if my goal was states, for some reason I was doing 30-second sprint intervals in January. The only two bike races I've ever won were both Red Rock Rampage in March in St. George. And I always kind of reach states being like, wow, I feel like I should be better in this for the amount of work that I'm doing. Right. And this is for me, like right now, I don't operate on a training plan. I ride as much as I can, whenever I can. And I think a lot of adults exist in that space out of necessity. And even for me, I do notice that like my fitness is different at different times of the year. You catch me at different times of the year, I'm going to have a different FTP. I'm going to have different durability. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm really excited for next year when I'll have the summer off to kind of see how I do in the fall, right?
But you'll overtrain.
I'll overtrain, right? But the point is that like this is, even if you don't intend to be doing this is something that you kind of naturally happens, is that your fitness exists in cycles. And I think a lot of young cyclists have a hard time coming to terms with the fact that you are not the same bike rider all year long, you know, and that you, the first time you ever feel what feels like regression, where, oh my gosh, there's a time in the past where I was stronger than I am now, that was like a mentally hard thing for me to deal with.
And I think another thing too that some kids are concerned about is that they might have peaked early.
Sure.
And you know, I think a lot of times, like if someone does really well at a certain race,
like, oh, I must have peaked.
They must have peaked.
Right.
And like,
now, bike racing's complicated. There's a lot of reasons. You could have had an especially good day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think, I mean, and I have kind of, I mean, people peak early, but I think just because you're doing better and you have really good results doesn't necessarily,
you might have finally learned how to eat before the race.
Yeah.
Four of the other people who are usually good might have had a bad day. Like a lot of things could have happened that could explain that.
So, yeah. And then another thing to point out, I think I mentioned this earlier, is that peaking isn't a day. It's like a period of time that usually is a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, it really depends.
It's not the flip of a switch either. It's a wave more than like a spike, right?
So that's peaking. Now tapering is something that ideally is going to make your ultimate race, your A race, as good as it can possibly be. And so what tapering is, you're basically shedding a little bit of fatigue while maintaining your fitness.
Right.
And it's kind of a...
which you can do over the short term, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a balancing act, you know, because when you train, it'll make you faster once you recover from it. But in the short term, it makes you fatigued. You
know? Right.
And if anyone's ever tried to do a race, or have you ever tried to go, like, you go on a group ride after doing a really hard ride the weekend before?
Yes.
Does it make it easier?
Oh, no, no, no.
No.
No, no, no.
No. Fatigue's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, you're not going to race well if you're fatigued.
Now, a lot of you deal with fatigue on a somewhat chronic basis because you're riding a lot. And, like, in March, I'm not worried about this because I'm not racing as much, right? But, you know, like, you get to a point where you're like, you don't, and we, this is what we say, like, our standard race prep, don't go hike temp the day before your race. Like, don't do something that's going to wear your body out. No, maybe hiking temp is good for you as an athlete in the long term. But if you have the narrow specific goal of, I want to crush it at States in 3 days, or maybe even in 2 weeks, then you're making different decisions. But for me, like, if my goal for the year was cross States, which is going to be what, a month and a half, like mid-November, I wouldn't start to taper now because I, you know, like that's way too far out where I'm going to shed a ton of fitness. And, you know, so this is like, I mean, I'm curious, what is the range where you're tapering for a 1 day event? Like up to a week and a half?
So yeah, you could find a lot of different theories on it. I think a week to a week and a half is where most people would land.
Yeah.
And so obviously you don't want to show up at a race fatigued, right?
No.
We've just kind of
That's
established
the easiest that. Way to ruin your race. Yeah.
Yeah. What if you show up to a race, like, what if you just, like, come too rested?
Yeah, you don't touch the bike for a week and a half, and then you wake up race morning, show up in the start line.
I would say that's worse than coming fatigued.
Potentially. I think it depends on who you are, right? And, like, the level of physical stress that happens
in
your...
Oh, for me, that would be awful.
Like, well, I do think it depends. Like, I think depending on the kind of, like, base level of physical stress that exists in your life, like, that could maybe change.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has to find their own balance, but both are bad. You don't want to do either of
those. Yeah, so the art of tapering is being able to shred... Why do I keep saying that?
I don't know.
Shed, it's like subconscious or something.
You definitely don't shred, so I don't know where that's coming from. You might shed. I think you shed more than you shred, but...
So, yeah, so the art is being able to shed enough fatigue that you come up fresh.
Right.
But you're doing enough work that you're maintaining your fitness and you're not losing... You know, because, like, you can lose a little bit of fitness in a week and a half. You're not going to lose. And the thing is, we've talked before about, like, the rate that you lose fitness. Like,
yeah,
your aerobic base, you don't lose that very fast. Like,
that would almost take, I mean, like
a month or two.
People go, or even, but even people go on LDS missions for 2 years and then get back on the bike and they're not that far off where they used to be. Yeah. Right. Like that's long. You've earned that.
That zone two work that you've been doing for 4 or 5 years, you don't lose that very quick at all. You know, some of it needs to be maintained.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of that maintenance is just preventing you from getting rusty or whatever, you know. But yeah, that fitness comes and goes super slowly. Your top end race fitness, however, it comes and goes pretty quickly.
Yes.
And so that's what you really need to maintain. And so how you're balancing this and kind of what almost the consensus is on this is about a week and a half out, what you start to do is you're going to maintain your frequency, which means if you ride 5 days a week, you're going to keep riding 5 days a week. Okay. You're going to maintain your intensity. Like if you're doing your intervals at 300 watts, you're going to keep doing those intervals at 300 watts. If you're doing intervals on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you're going to keep doing your intervals on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You know, if you're doing openers before a race, you're going to keep doing openers before a race. You're going to maintain that intensity. All you're really reducing to try to encourage some freshness is you're just reducing the duration of those workouts. So, you know, if your zone two rides typically are 2 hours, you're probably going to make them an hour and a half or even an hour. And that's going to help. You're going to gain a little bit of freshness that way. If you're used to doing, we'll say if you're doing 8 intervals typically, now you're probably going to do like 6. You're going to stop them well before the point that you're just totally exhausted and spent, you know. So you're basically just cutting the duration of your workouts down by 3/4 or half.
Because all of a sudden you're looking for a short-term gain. Right. Which is, I think, is like a mindset switch for a lot of people that, like, we usually talk about kind of long term stuff. Now, all of a sudden you're talking about like, hey, and I don't know if you're going to go into this, like all of a sudden you're going to start, you know, shaving some intervals off the workout, eating a little more pasta, you know, like you're doing these things because on the day you want to be your best on this particular day, because you guys are mountain bike racers and you exist in a world where you are individually racing on a one day basis. Now, like if you're a pro roadie and you're a domestique and your job is to be pretty darn good all year long, your relationship with tapering might be different. But this is, I think for me, I always struggled with like, well, I feel like it's good and virtuous that I do as many intervals as I can and that I'm disciplined with the way I eat. And in a lot of ways, it's like, you're definitely not letting yourself go, but you're kind of like, everything is about this day. I'm doing everything in service of my performance on this day, even if it won't serve me well 2 weeks from now. I don't care about 2 weeks from now because States is that Saturday, right?
Yeah, because it's like your tapering lasts a week.
Right.
But if you did this all season,
right,
you would be slower ultimately,
right?
You know, because yeah, you're not really gaining fitness. You're gaining less fitness in hopes that the increased,
you're basically maybe even willing to sacrifice a little bit of fitness because the fatigue that you're going to shed along with it
is going to more than
the net is you
overcompensate.
Yeah, the net is you being faster.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's like you just can't do this all the time.
No.
Yeah, and that's a little.
That's called going to college.
You know. And that's kind of the difficulty about like planning for the Nike season is because all these races are really important to all the riders, you know?
Yeah. Well, every you're only Nike doing race, five, right?
Every Nike race is kind of a big deal. And
yeah.
And you kind of end up doing a little bit of a taper. Before
kind of a mini taper, you've called it.
You know, and which is usually just kind of more resting up a little bit, kind of a couple days before the race. And
but after States, that's it. For most of you guys, aren't going to race again after States.
Hopefully.
And if you do, it's not going to be races that you're that invested in, right?
Like if you're doing Frog Hollow, you shouldn't treat it as a big deal.
No, or if you want to do Cross, you know, you're more concerned about Nike than Cross for most of you.
But and so that's, you know, and then obviously you're going to improve your sleep during your taper and improve your nutrition. You're going to not want to miss any meals during that period.
Right.
And, you know, you might even put on a little bit of weight during your taper, and that's fine.
Sure.
Carrying a little extra fuel in your fuel tank is not going to hurt you.
100%.
You know, and so that's kind of the principle. And I think a lot of people understand that. And it really just makes sense.
Yeah.
This
is intuitive.
Yeah. I don't know. The more I do this, the less special I make tapering. I've almost kind of found that... I don't do a whole lot different than I do leading up to the regular Nike races. I mean, I do cut the workouts down a little bit. I reduce some of the, like the amount of intervals people do, but I almost think that like some people kind of rest up too much and just show up kind of flat and rusty. So
I was thinking there's something to be said for just kind of maintaining a routine that you're used to and that shaking that up. Cause I've found that like shaking up my eating really drastically before a race just doesn't help me.
Yeah.
That like, and again, this is personal too.
So don't overdo the taper.
No.
Yeah. Don't, you know, and if you found that what you're doing to get ready for the regular Nike races is working well, maybe just keep doing that. I don't know. But
yeah.
In fact, one thing I've noticed with the riders I work with is that they always seem to feel awesome the Saturday before state champs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they kind of get to state champs feeling not as awesome.
Yeah.
Which really doesn't kind of make any sense because one thing about peaking that I've kind of forgot to mention is a lot of times before people taper, they'll have like a really, really, really big exhaust week. So you have something to taper from. So like the week before they start the taper,
right?
They'll do more work and harder intervals and a little more volume. And then they taper down from that to kind of hopefully get like a little bit of a super compensation or something, you know? And it seems like in my experience, it was seeming like these kids would do better at the end of that exhaust week on that Saturday than they would at the race where they've had that taper week where they're supposedly freshening up. And I'm like, why are they performing better when they're exhausted?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of there's like the nervousness factor that I think a lot, like that was Jacob's thing and mine, I think too, that like I was capable of so much more when you weren't timing me.
Yeah.
Right. So I think there's some of that, but you know,
and that's kind of the conclusion I came to is that there's, I think there's a huge important factor to truly having a peak performance that I was missing that would make it so that they could perform really. Because the thing is during this period of time, like the week before the Nike race and the week of state champs, they're still at peak fitness.
Yeah, I was like, your fitness doesn't change that much. In 7 days, that's not changing a ton, right? Yeah,
that, and, you know, and really tapering isn't going to make, I mean, it can make a few percentage, like a small percentage of sure. a difference, you know.
The pros definitely do it.
You know, but it just wasn't making any sense that, like, why they would feel better before they tapered and worse after, you know. And I one day kind of had an epiphany that something else is required to have a peak performance. And that's what we're going to spend the rest of this time talking about. And that's why I wanted to talk about these two things on the same episode, because I think it's critical. Now, are you familiar with the term catalyst?
Yeah. I mean, a catalyst is something that makes something else easier. So like in chemistry, a catalyst is something that makes another reaction happen faster or with better results.
Exactly. And like you think of paint, like there's like professional car painters or whatever are going to use catalyzed paints where they'll take the paint. And the thing is this paint, if they sprayed it on the car, I think it eventually would dry or cure, whatever they call it, eventually. But it might take a whole lot of time, and
the paint could get all damaged, dusty in that and damaged, point of time.
And it right. might not be as strong or something. But the painters add what's called a catalyst, and sometimes they call it a hardener or something. But they'll add a catalyst to the paint, then they spray the paint on. And that catalyst causes the paint to cure.
To dry really quickly.
Really
right?
quickly and, yeah. And hard, you know. And there's glues like that too, where you can add a catalyst. Once the catalyst is added, it magically activates the glue and then.
Or like yeah. in chemistry, like certain reactions happen if you add heat or stir the solution or whatever, right? Like I remember learning about that in 11th grade chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there really is. And this is something I've learned just kind of recently, that there's a key that's got to unlock a peak performance. And that key is something mental, you know, is something upstairs. And that's, you know, I think sometimes we underestimate the power of our psychology.
Well, and the complexity of it too, and the person, and because the other thing is, like, I think there's some kind of universal physical rules that apply to just physiology, right? Like, if you ride, you know, for most kids, like, if your base is bigger, you will be faster. There are very few cases where that won't be true, right? But I think it's hard because, like, psychology's not that straightforward. And I think different people, I think you and I sometimes, like, don't see eye to eye on a lot of this stuff because we're almost imagining a different kid. I think there's a lot of kids who are like me who need to hear a certain thing and need to think a certain way. And I think there's a lot of other kids who are different that maybe you have in mind that need, because I'm always saying stuff like, I wish I could have told myself, like, you need to consider the possibility that you will fail, and you need to come to terms with the failure and realize that it's not the end of the world if you fail at this, and that some of that paralyzing nervousness that you're feeling right now that's really hurting you can go away, because if you fail, you realize that you're still a good person and people will still love you. And I think there's other people that need to hear, you need to stop considering that you're going to fail. You need to consider that you will succeed, because you're only imagining failure and you're not really allowing yourself to imagine success, right? So this is hard because there's not a universal answer to any of this, and different people need different things, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, and in most of our podcasts, we talk a lot about like the hours that you train and your nutrition and,
right.
And those things are just huge and are going to get you like so far. But remember how at the, like when we started this podcast today, I asked about like, what would a 1% improvement do to a race, and 36 seconds, which doesn't sound a lot, like a lot, but that's huge.
That's huge.
Like I said, if someone's 36 seconds ahead of you, they're out of sight.
People spend thousands of dollars looking for gains much smaller than that.
And you know, the 1% number I pulled out of thin air. It could be 10%, it could be 0%. But I guarantee that this could be really, really important. And like I say, I honestly think that this is kind of the key or the catalyst that's going to unlock a peak performance. So super important to talk about. So I mentioned earlier that as we were driving to Richfield, Amy wanted me to give her a pep talk. And so we kind of started talking about some of the things that I'd been thinking about in preparation for this podcast. And so her previous race was in Manaway. And so the girls started, she kind of started in the middle, had an awful start. I don't know what happened. It starts up this steep grassy hill that just sucks all your power. Like you're trying to pedal in that
you're mode. Throwing down 500 watts to go 4 miles an hour, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's exhausting. And she kind of like on that start, she kind of started in the middle, got onto the road and was about like second to last. And she just looked miserable. And she just said that the entire race, she felt horrible. She felt awful. She finished the race angry, crying. She wouldn't hug me. She told me that,
I'm never racing my bike again.
She's like, I hate this. I never want to do it again. That was my last bike race ever.
Yeah. We've all had that race.
Yeah. And luckily Arlie Pankey was there to smooth it over and her friends could smooth. I was the last one that was going to be able to.
Yeah.
Smooth
so you're only going to add fuel to that fire.
Yeah. So that was her Manaway race, her Richfield race. She finished the race and she was just like dancing around, hugging all the girls. And she's like, Dad, I just love these girls. They are the best. It was the most, I had so much fun out there the entire time. It was just so much fun riding with so-and-so and, you know, and she had a better result. She moved up quite a few places and, she's just like, it made such a difference. And so first of all, I was shocked that Amy would ask me for advice because that never really happens. I was even kind of like even more surprised that the advice, what we talked about actually made a difference for her, you know? And so what we're talking about today is RPE. We've talked about RPE a lot, but it's incredibly important. No, we did an episode a while back, and I think Joe called it You Want It, How Bad, or whatever. It was about the book, How Bad You Want It. And I told Joe, I'm like, hey, Joe, we just need to go. Because I went back and listened to that episode, and I thought we did a pretty good job. Kind of like, I don't know if we could really do any better if we
remember. I remember that one was good. I
like
that.
Yeah, I'm like, let's just have people go back and listen to that one again. And Joe's like, no, we probably just need to do another episode.
Yeah.
So. We're going to talk about similar things, but I think it's going to be approached from a different angle. And I've learned, you know, this concept doesn't only exist in that book. It's kind of all over the place. And I've learned a lot of new kind of cool things about it that I think we definitely deserves another episode, but go back and listen to that one too.
It is good.
Yeah. I think that'll reinforce what we're talking about today. But so just kind of a review of How Bad You Want It. It used to be thought that our mind was kind of like a central governor for our body, that its job was to prevent us from going so hard or digging so deep that we're going to damage our body. We're going to overheat our body.
And this is intuitive because your brain's job is to keep your body alive, mm-hmm. right? Like your brain does a lot of, the reason that you feel the emotions of fear and anxiety and anger are all tied back to evolutionary reasons to try to keep you the meat sack full of you alive. Yeah. Right.
And that was kind of the prevailing theory for a while. And that theory has been replaced by more kind of like the RPE theory. And cause there really is a limit, but we're really not in too big of a danger of hitting it.
No.
In fact, the only person, unless you're Drew Derrick, you're probably not going to hit that limit. You know, I think very few people are capable because of RPE.
Right.
And so really it's not really that we have a central governor that's limiting us. What it is actually, it's our relationship with how our efforts feel that allows us to continue pushing or back off.
Mm. I have some thoughts about this. Okay. Cause I was actually telling someone recently that like the best races I've ever had were not the races where I suffered the most. The worst races I've ever had were the races where I suffered the most. And I'd also say that like, And I think like Art O'Connor's talked about this a little bit too, that like, I think there's this weird pain culture that exists in endurance athletics because it is a painful thing. And I think one of the cool things about it is that I am in this community of people who are able to do things that are uncomfortable, which I'm realizing as I've grown up is not something that all people have, right? But I do think it turns into this weird perverse culture where the pain becomes the point. And, you know, like, and I tell people that like the most painful thing I've ever done physically easily were those legendary skyline intervals that some people hear about, right? I can't really imagine anything you could offer me that could make me want to do that again. Like if you said, do those again and you will be the world champion, you will have the rainbow jersey. I don't know that I'd want to. Like that, like there's certain, and I think people who like live with chronic illnesses and stuff that involve pain know that like pain in and of itself isn't good. And that if you really understand what pain is, I don't think you really seek out true pain and suffering. So,
and that's something I was going to point out a little later, that there's a difference. We're not talking about pain today.
Yeah.
Pain is something different entirely. And yeah, pain and RPE are different.
We're going to talk about there's a distinction there.
I mean, you did say something interesting, like your worst races, you also felt the worst. And
yeah,
we're totally going there for sure.
Yeah.
But let's explain what RPE first is. Now, I've thrown around different terms carelessly. Sometimes I call it rate of perceived exertion and rate of perceived effort. In fact, in How Bad You Want It, I think he pretty consistently calls it rate of perceived effort. And I usually call it rate of perceived exertion. I kind of see it going both ways. And I think the term is fairly interchangeable. But the more I've kind of, I think that maybe the distinction we could make is that like rate of perceived effort is like how hard you think you're pushing, kind of like you're being your own power meter. You know, that's rate of perceived effort. Rate of perceived exertion is more like how well you think you're doing.
Okay, that's interesting. Because that's the value of a power meter, right? Right there is that I've had those days where I'm like, oh, I think I may be doing pretty good. And they flip to the power screen and be like, oh, wow, I'm doing 150 watts, which for someone my size sucks, right? I think you have other days where you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm feeling that good. And then I finished rides and been like, whoa, I got a KOM? Really? Like, I didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think those obviously happen at different times of the year, right? But that's like the value. That's why power meters exist, more or less, right? To give you a true objective number of how much power you're creating with your legs.
Yeah. So that's kind of just a subtle difference there. And I'll still probably use the terms interchangeably just because I'm sloppy. But there is a difference. And we're more talking about the rate of perceived exertion, just like how you feel about. Well, here's actually... yeah, rate of perceived exertion is how our effort feels or how we feel about how we feel.
Okay. Because I know that too. I know some days where I'm like, whoa, that hurt and that was great. And there's other days where I'm like, I'm done hurting. I had one of those days a few days ago. I'm like, I don't feel like hurting right now. Mm-hmm. I'm hurting enough in other ways. I don't feel like doing this.
And so our rate of perceived exertion, or maybe we could call RPE from now on.
Sure.
It's a little less of a tongue twister for someone that can't pronounce things very well. I kind of think of it as like the gas, the fuel light. I don't want to say gas light because that means something else nowadays. Like the fuel light on your car, on your dashboard, you know. Like on most cars, that kind of comes on like when you got 2 gallons of gas left, you know, oh yeah, I better get to the gas station.
Got another 30 to 50 miles to go before I'm stranded, right?
Yeah. RPE is kind of like that. Like that'll come on well before we're actually in danger of harming our body. But sometimes for some people, it can come on with 5 gallons of gas to go. And other people, it can come on with a half a gallon of gas to go.
Because we've talked about this before. Like there have been kids we've worked with where we've both kind of said, like, this person just doesn't know how to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm one of those. Like, yeah. I don't, like...
Well, no, but even for you, I think people who are attracted to this sport probably do fall on the side of the bell curve where like physical discomfort is something they're willing to endure. I think a lot of people just are really unwilling to experience any kind of physical discomfort.
And I know some riders that don't think the ride was fun unless they were really uncomfortable at some point.
Yeah.
Like, they find some joy in that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not that way. Like,
yeah,
if
sure.
it were me, I would just never, ever leave zone two. Like,
right.
That's just,
yeah.
me, you know, but... I've been doing some intervals with Skyline lately and every time I'm doing, man, I need this so bad.
Like, right. Yeah.
And I can feel myself getting faster, you know, because I've been doing it, but, I do kind of avoid the discomfort a little bit, but yeah, so, you know, so yeah, I think that could potentially be one thing that separates a pro from an amateur is their RPE light comes on with a half gallon of gas left.
Oh yeah.
Whereas like someone off the street's going to come on with like 7 gallons left or something, you know?
Well, I think there's a gradient too between someone off the street versus me versus Tadej Pogačar, right? That like, I think anybody, you can't be a professional cyclist without really having a very high tolerance for not just like effort discomfort, but like being out in the rain for 6 hours and, you know, crashing a lot versus, like I said, I think a lot of people just aren't willing to walk upstairs and they'd rather take the elevator.
Yeah.
Right. Which isn't bad. It's not like there's no, and I think we should say really quick, there is no moral dimension to this. You are not a better person because you know how to experience physical discomfort.
Actually, you're better if you take the stairs. We'll just
you're better if you take this. Yes, you're a better person. 100%. That's what we want to be endorsing on this podcast. No, but you know what I
actually,
mean,
actually, right? Cyclists are known for struggling up the stairs when you're...
That is true. That is, I don't like stairs, but yeah. You know, that's, yeah.
But yeah, so... Yeah, so RPE is something that it can either, like, being able to change our relationship with it is something that's going to either inhibit or reach more of our potential.
Yes.
And, you know, and this is kind of like where I said how important that 1% could be in a race like this could be huge, you know, and... So Amy on her race at Manaway, she had an awful start and she said she just felt sick and awful the entire race.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, and
if you've done this for any amount of time, you know exactly what she's talking about.
You know, and I once had someone ask me like why we have sore legs, you know, like why our legs feel good some days and not others. And I kind of actually want to do a whole podcast
that's
sore legs.
That's a good question.
You know, because it's like,
why?
There's so many different reasons. It was like one of those things. It's kind of like a headache, you know, like
right.
There's so many different reasons you could be having a headache, but it's still a headache, you know. But what if most of the reasons that our legs don't feel good one particular day could be in our head?
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that that's partly the reason. Is your legs could feel bad because of something mental, which is just kind of crazy, but
yes,
in a lot of circumstances, I think it's true. And so, yeah, our RPE, it can be significantly influenced by the circumstances that we kind of find ourselves in. And let's just talk about some examples of how this can be true. So, personal example, I ride the trainer a lot, you know, and a lot of times, like I'll do like my workouts. I like to do is like some sweet spot workouts in erg mode.
Yeah.
You know, which kind of forces you to like, it just forces you.
It adjusts the resistance of the trainer to make sure you're always putting out a desired amount.
You're always putting out the same amount of power. Okay. And I was doing some sweet spot intervals. I had it in erg mode. And I was watching YouTube and I was listening to some really soft music and I was just really, really kind of struggling through I like to watch music videos when I do.
Yeah.
You know, and the music I was listening to was kind of soothing and soft and I was really, really struggling through the intervals. And the next song that came on was that like Creep from Radiohead.
I'm a creep.
Yeah. Kind of my theme song. But it was amazing that next interval felt completely different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like it was easy. And before I was struggling to hold the target power before, my cadence was slipping off. The next one, it just felt so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I had the same fitness, the same hydration status, the same nutrition status.
Yeah, this was within a minute of each other. Yeah. None of the only variable that could have changed in this period of time is your head.
Yeah. And for some reason, that music lowered my RPE. You know, like another example. So I was talking to McCall and she was telling me that the Manaway race that like she's like, okay, so when I was coming up that last climb, you kind of come up this last steep climb before you go down kind of a slight descent to the finish. And there's a lot of people that are kind of like cheering there. And a lot of people from Skyline were cheering there. Like Josh Flukiger came and was cheering from there. And she's like, yeah, on that last climb, like, and I came through there and there are all these people cheering and I just felt so good. She's like, can I do more intervals like that? Because I think I'm really good at them. And I'm like, well, maybe, but I think it was something a little bit more. And I think the, you know, having a crowd there cheering for you is drastically going to reduce the RPE.
Oh, riding with other people, I notice I always go faster when I ride with other people. Or like those Skyline intervals, we're done with other people. And I think the other people dimension's huge too, because there's both the encouragement and then the expectation that you have when you're exposed to other people and they're watching your performance, right?
Yeah, and there's like a lot of things. And it's... and right now we're just kind of illustrating how powerful this can be.
This is not like a minor thing.
So like imagine you're in a race. Okay. You're coming towards the end of the race.
Yes.
And you think you're alone. You're kind of locked into position. The person, you don't know how far ahead the person ahead of you is or how far the person behind you is.
Yep.
You're just kind of pushing along. All of a sudden somebody catches you.
Oh,
and somebody passes you.
Yes. This happened to me recently.
How does that make you feel?
There's a panic for a sec. And then I think it immediately it feels bad. Cause I think for me, I'm like, wow, I just suffered so much and I was kind of hoping I could kind of cruise into the finish line. But now I'm like, okay, now I know that in my future, there's some pain. There's some pain between me and the finish line that wasn't there before. I think is immediately where my head goes.
Yeah.
And this happened to me at, Cactus Hugger, both of the past 2 years, this has happened to me, this exact situation where I thought, I was like, okay, I'm not catching the person ahead of me. That's not a realistic goal. That would be a bad goal right now. Right. And I have no idea how far behind the next person is. Right. And then within 2 to 3 minutes of the finish, I was like, oh, okay. So now this isn't just me, just get to the end. Now it's, there's a battle now.
So that drastically is going to affect your RPE.
Yeah.
You know, another situation is like you're in a race, you like fifth place is who knows where ahead of you. You're pedaling along. You think you're alone. You're maybe worried about someone catching you from behind. Mm-hmm. You come up over a hill and you see fifth place, like
all of a sudden there's that podium. Sight. And this is different if it was seventh place, but if it's fifth place or if it's third place or if it's first place,
yeah,
all of the sudden
all of a sudden that person's in sight. You mm-hmm. felt like you're pushing hard before.
Yep.
I guarantee somehow miraculously you're finding another gear.
Yeah.
And you're feeling your effort's going to increase, but you're going to feel,
oh, it's worth it.
You're feel good about that effort.
Well, I think it all boils down to, are you getting something out of your pain? Right? I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, but I think that's the way I think about it, is like pointless pain and suffering is never good. But then, you know, and like maybe like this is a really drastic example, but like would you run into a burning building to save a shirt you kind of like? No, probably not. Would you run into a burning building to save your child? Absolutely. Right? That like the pain's the same.
Which child?
That's a great question. Cause if it's me, you're like, I do like that shirt, but I think like there is kind of a transactional aspect to it too, that like, am I really willing to like go and completely lay my soul into the line and go all the way into the dark place to finish in the same position 10 seconds faster? Or, you know, mm-hmm. that like that number next to my name means something to me, you know, or being able to say I finished on the podium or I won or I finished in the top half or I finished under 9 hours or whatever your goal is for said event. There's some utility there. Like it almost like this almost turns into like an economics lesson that like that is valuable to me. So I'm willing to do more for it. Right.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, the circumstances you find yourself in during a race can greatly...
Getting a mechanical is another example of this.
Can greatly affect your RPE.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like if things are going well, your RPE is lower. If things are going bad, RPE is going to be higher.
Yep.
You know, and it's like it's still you. It's still the same fitness, the same... But for some reason, like RPE is just kind of like... Sometimes it's our friend and sometimes it's holding us back, you know, and it's tricky, you know, like the classic example most people give, and I have a little bit of beef with this, is like at the end of the race, it's like people are going really, really hard. And then at the end of the race, they're able to sprint.
Yep.
Which
Physiologically, that's a different system.
It's a different system
that you're using. Yeah. But the point, yeah, the, sure,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah,
yeah, that you're not, you really aren't able to do that sprint on, I don't know if we'd use like a race course, like on climb number 2 out of 4 of the last lap, but you can definitely do it in the last 50 meters.
But the point is you've got more to give, but for some reason, RPE is either making it easier for you or harder for you. Like if you're like, if you're in first place and second place is 50 seconds behind,
yeah,
your RPE is low. You're putting down an awesome effort, but it's feeling great.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you're like fighting for trying not to be last,
yep.
You know, you're putting, you know, you could be putting down the same amount of watts as you are on that race you're winning.
Right.
But it's going to feel completely different.
Yes.
And so it's really kind of a cool and powerful thing. And being able to have a different relationship with it could really make a meaningful difference.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, an RP is not a bad thing because one, it's very useful for pacing. Like,
yeah,
you know, like the worst thing you can do in any race is just like go out too hard and just blow up and not be able to finish.
Well, in time trialing, they say like, you don't chase a number in time trialing, that you might be able to do the math and say, hey, I know if I can do 360 watts for this time trial, I'll win. Mm-hmm. But that they'll still like watch the Alex Dowsett stuff on time trial pacing. It's really interesting. Like you really can't chase that.
And imagine a world where we didn't have it, you know, you'd have these people like having really, really good races, but then dying
of a heart attack. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah. It's good that you have this.
It's good, but it's something that can help us or hinder us depending on which side, like how we feel like we're doing. So there's some major things that affect our RPE, and then there's some more subtle things and the major things we talk about a lot, and that's going to be like your training, your fitness, you know, like your trained self. If your trained self raced your untrained self, it would be night and day difference, you know, like, you know, if your trained self and your untrained self were riding at 200 watts steady, that effort would feel completely different. But, you know, so training's huge. Fatigue's a big one. Like fatigue can majorly affect RPE, you know.
If you got a bunch of shredded muscle fibers from your ridiculous hike the day before, there's nothing you can do about that, right? That's going to affect you.
Yeah. Illness, fueling, hydration, being heat adapted,
stress.
Stress. A lot of these things majorly affect your RPE. We've talked a lot about those in the past. We kind of, you know,
pretty straightforward.
Yeah. But there's other things that can really affect our RPE too. And big one we mentioned earlier is music.
Yep.
You know, there's, you know, competition's a huge one.
Yes.
And an interesting one because like, for some people, it positively affects their RPE. Like you get some kids in a race and the adrenaline.
Oh, they come alive. They're like, whoa, I didn't know you could ride like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get other kids in a race, they're like, they fall apart.
Or I think me to an extent. I think I've always struggled with that, where I don't race the way I think I'm capable of riding.
Yeah. You know, and riding with people can affect your RPE, you know, and that can be kind of conditional too, you know, based on kind of how well you feel like you're doing and so forth. You know, you could be in a group that's like waiting for you at every fork, and you could be in a group where you're kind of like,
you're the stud and you're waiting for everybody. You're like, oh, good job, sport. You know, like
you're like breathing through your nose and everyone else is dying and you're feeling pretty good about your effort there and stuff, you know, and just like how much fun and enjoyment you're having. Cheering from crowds is huge.
Yes.
Like, when I do my iCup races in a Maybird rider, if I hear my name out there or someone cheers me on, it everything feels better, and it's makes a huge difference. You know, knowing that the end is near, you know, or knowing how
you finish your race with 4 minutes to go, I think effort wise for a lot of people, you're like, okay, I'm done. I've done it in a very short amount of time. This is going to be over. You can do anything for 4 minutes versus like, man, I've got another 2 hours to go.
Yeah. Or, you know, rough. If you've got a climb and you kind of know that, you know, this climb's going to be over in 10 seconds, I've got this, you know, that kind of
like when you hit barrel roll and True Grit, you're like, okay,
yeah,
this is, it's not, it doesn't, it still hurts, but I've done it. I'm finishing this today.
So temperature also affects RPE.
Oh yeah.
And I know I'm kind of like the Grinch on like, or Scrooge or whichever Christmas analogy you want to use on dump bottles, because they don't really do anything to actually cool your core temperature off.
Yeah.
But they definitely do.
And we mentioned this.
They can lower RPE.
Sure.
You know, so.
And if, hey, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
If you like that.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. Caffeine actually is very effective at lowering RPE.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot at Nike races. Better throw that out there.
Oh yeah. Never do that. Never, never, never.
But one I actually got thinking about that I might kind of just throw out there is at this, at the Richfield race, as riders were riding by, their chains sounded awful.
Yes, this was me yesterday in Park City.
And I did a decent ride while I was out there. I had a goal to just hurry and take a quick break and try and do 100 kgs on the bike. That was my goal.
Yep.
And I didn't use my own chain lube that I really like. I borrowed some of Skyline's chain lube and it, like, I did one lap on this little course I was doing, and you could probably hear my chain from the space station. And I went back and, used some of the lube I liked. It would last about two or three laps.
Yeah.
And, but then I got thinking, you know, like, I think that if kids wanted to throw that last little bit of money at their race before state champs, I honestly think that maybe considering a wax chain.
I was just going to call out a wax chain.
You know,
yep.
Like, I mean, if that
parents, you already dropped $6,500 on the bike. Contender has pre-wax chains. You can
I was
so going to
say, do
lazily.
The pre-wax chain. Don't go get a crock pot.
I want to say they're $125 or something.
I've seen $100 online.
Yep.
Get the Silke and then get the Silke lube that comes with it.
Yep. Just do it.
Consider getting a wax chain if your chain's not already stretched. Check your chain.
Yes, before you pop your chain off and create a...
Check to make sure your chain's not stretched. But I honestly, because like if your chain in your drivetrain is making a lot of noise, you are actually losing a lot of power.
Oh,
but
I don't want to tell you how much because I don't want it to discourage you in the future when you inevitably fight. I would say 30, 40 watts potentially. Depending on how dirty it is.
Even if it's 8, that's too many.
Yeah, that's a ridiculously huge number.
But the other thing, too, is like when your chain's making that screeching noise like a gate from heck opening, it's killing your RPE.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so check your chain. If you haven't already stretched your chain, I would highly suggest going out and getting a wax chain, because especially for varsity and... for varsity riders, because your race is so long out in the sandy desert.
Mm-hmm. For endurance races too, for true grip point to point.
It's going to get you some more power and it's going to preserve your precious RPE.
Yeah.
So just wanted to throw that, just, you know, another $100 you guys all wanted to spend.
You can't take it with you.
So those are some things that affect your RPE. Now here's the $1 million question though. Is what are things, okay, so we've established that when things are going well, when you're winning the race, when your second place is 45 seconds behind you, RPE feels awesome. Okay. What if you find yourself in unfortunate circumstances, you're doing less than you expected and things seem bad and your RPE is high? Like what can you do in those circumstances?
I think I have kind of a defeatist answer to this, and unless you've done the work to know that you're still a good person and life goes on and that it's okay when bad things happen and that you're gonna have bad races, I don't know. I can tell you I've struggled with this. I can't think of any good short-term solutions to fix that. I think I could handle that situation better now than I could when I was 17. I can tell you that for sure.
Is there something that you can do when your RPE is really, really high because things aren't going awesome? Is there something that you could do to change that? And if there is, wouldn't that be kind of awesome to know?
That would be, yeah.
I think so.
What do you have in mind? Is this your rhetorical setup here?
Well, you actually have to pay for a premium membership to unlock that. But no, there's some tools, you know, and there's a lot of different tools, and like one tool might work for one person and, you know, you got to kind of find what works for you. But there are some things that are going to help, you know, that Yeah. So the first thing I think you need to do is just kind of like, after listening to what we've learned today, you can kind of recognize and acknowledge what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like, okay, things aren't going well, my legs feel like garbage, a lot of this is mental.
Yep.
You know, it's not that I suck. It's not that I've overtrained. It's not that I've lost all my fitness.
Yep.
It's just that this is a true mental thing that happens to us.
Step out and say, okay, it's one of those days.
Yeah. Step outside and like, yeah. So it's one of those days. So I think just acknowledging that you've still got that potential, it just feels worse today than it does on other days. So that understanding helps a lot too. Another tool is to just remind yourself how long these efforts are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, like, your body doesn't really know that you're not going to be doing this forever. It thinks that you could just be doing...
This is just your new reality.
Yeah, this is your new reality. When really, you just need to tell yourself, okay, this climb is a 30-second climb. It's going to feel like 3 minutes, but it's really just a 30-second climb. At the top, I get a little bit of a rest.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell yourself that. That's going to... That could lower your RPE up that climb, you know. And so just kind of like breaking the course down.
Start focusing on short-term goals.
Exactly. Chunking the course into a little shorter, you know, because like you could start, like when you start a cross-country race and everyone's going just full out, you need to remind yourself that they're not going to do this pace the entire time.
No, that the first lap is usually much faster.
Yeah.
For most people.
You know, you're like, yeah, it's faster now. It's going to settle down later. I'm okay. You know. But yeah, definitely just chunking up the course into smaller sections. You know, like, okay, yeah, this road that I'm on, it's going to take about 2 or 3 minutes. I've done 2 or 3 minute intervals in training. I'll be fine. You know, this climb's going to be 5 minutes. You know, this, you know. Just break it into kind of, and just kind of know how long these sections are, which is why I do advocate for long pre-rides where you really, really get to know the course and become familiar with it. That helps a lot. Another thing that has actually been shown to lower RPE is, you know, when you're feeling that way, to take a second and think of something you're grateful for.
Yep.
You know, it just kind of shifts the energy a little bit.
I've had a lot of those. I've reminded myself a lot this year that, like, one of my best friends can't ride a normal bike anymore because he was paralyzed in October, right? That, like, I'm like, it's a privilege for me to be able to do this. And think about, like, how much would it suck if I lost this? And that even, you know, like, I would want this moment that I'm hating right now in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I don't think you should always live in that headspace. But I think it can be useful to go there from time to time.
Yeah, even like, this may sound kind of cheesy, but even like dedicating a climb that you've got to go do to a certain person.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was thinking like maybe do a climb for Adam Heckman or something.
Yeah.
You know, or like just think of someone that's special to you and just say, I'm doing this for them.
Yeah.
You know.
100%.
I mean, that could help. One thing that has a huge effect is fueling.
Yeah.
And that was kind of in our early category of like major things to do to affect RPE.
This might be something that you screwed up, which is why your day is going badly.
But an interesting thing to kind of point out there is even just like they found that swishing carbs, like if you put something sweet in your mouth and swish it and spit it out, it still gives you an advantage because what it does is it tells your brain that fuel is coming because your brain might be kind of like sensing low fuel availability and kind of slowing you down a little bit. And by taking some carbohydrates, it tells your mind that, yeah, fuel is coming. Your blood sugar is going to be maintained. You're going to be okay. So definitely learning how to fuel is going to help lower RPE. And then another one too is just learning how to kind of be okay with being uncomfortable. You know, just knowing that, you know, this sport hurts. It's temporary. It feels good when you're done, you know, but just kind of embracing the discomfort a little bit better.
You're going to be okay.
So another thing you can do is mantras. Now, might be a little cheesy to some people, but I think this is something easy and very actionable that you can do. My favorite, and mantras are basically just positive self-talk. first of all, just get really good at just being able to get rid of negative self-talk as quickly as you can. Reframe it, turn it into positive. Negative self-talk is not going to help you.
Yeah, it's for sure. It's for sure not going to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that needs to be reframed quickly.
Don't be calling yourself an idiot on the race course. Yeah. Even if you are, it's okay. Don't call yourself that.
So my favorite mantra, positive self-talk, is just to say, this hurts, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
So you're acknowledging that, yeah.
You're not living in some fairy tale make-believe land, which, and go back and listen to the other episode. I harshly, brutally criticize the motivation industry that is just kind of detached. Like, live in reality. Be like, yes. Yeah, this isn't great.
Yeah, this hurts. This isn't.
You know what? The number next to my name today isn't going to be the one I was hoping for last night before I went to sleep. And this hurts really bad. But.
Yeah. This hurts, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that it hurts doesn't mean. It doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't even mean that you're going slow.
No.
It doesn't mean, it just means that, yeah, this isn't comfortable. But the goal, we don't do cross-country races to go out there and be comfortable.
No.
I mean,
you know. The PlayStation's been invented.
Yeah.
You can play video games in a chair that massages you. Like, we live in the future. It's great. You know, like, we're not doing this because it's comfortable, right?
Another thing is, like, this hurts, but it's only going to last
48 more minutes
or
two more minutes.
No. Yeah. Like I would say it, chunk it, you know, like
chunk it. Only set short-term goals,
30 more seconds and I'm on this climb. I get a little bit of a rest.
So, sure.
Andrew's favorite one is just reminding him that everyone out there racing is hurting. There's no,
forget that.
Sometimes we just think we're the only one that's uncomfortable and that person that you're trying to catch is hurting. And the person that's trying to catch you is hurting. And you know,
killer bike racers use that too.
Yeah.
Remember that.
One I love to use when I'm going downhill is smooth as fast.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because like a lot of people get sloppy in races. Crashing never speeds you up.
Nope.
Smooth as fast. Brady, I think it was Brady that said this one. I love it. Is just reminding yourself to breathe.
Mm.
And that's a good one when you're on the start line. Just remind yourself to breathe with your belly, deep breaths. That's a good one. Just reframing negative thoughts in... Instead of saying that, like, oh, I'm going slow today, you could say, I want to go faster and I'm going to keep pushing.
Yep.
Yeah. Another one is just anticipating positive consequences, you know, like just tell yourself, you know what, if I just keep pushing, keep giving my best effort, I'm going to be really happy about myself after this is done.
Yeah. I'd say if you're having the experience that I had a lot where it's just the first lap feels wrong. Be like, you know what? I'm probably not warmed up enough. I'm going to start feeling better in just a second. You know what? Hey, I didn't eat close. And like, try to figure out a reason for it and tell yourself. And even if you kind of know it's a lie, be like, hey, you know what? My legs are going to start feeling, I'm going to feel better on the second lap. Then we're going to go for it. You know, find some narrative you can tell yourself. You'll start to believe it after a while. And it maybe even be, it might even be true.
You know, and if you've got like this toolbox full of tools and you get good at using them, it might give you a second here, a second there, a second here, a second there, but you know, what if it can add up to 15 seconds over a race or 30 or 40, you know, or
what if it just changes your relationship with bike racing and makes you a little less nervous about the next one?
Yeah. And so you talked earlier a little bit about pain and let's just clarify something real quick. We're talking today about discomfort and not pain.
Yeah.
Pain is different because like the difference between discomfort and pain is this discomfort from the effort. Our RPE is going to go away once the effort's done.
Yeah, you can turn it off immediately.
Like once you get, like if you're doing a 3-minute interval, once that 3-minute interval's up, you feel better instantly.
Yeah, if you have bone cancer, that you can't make that go away.
Yeah, like if you know.
Like don't disrespect real pain.
Yeah, if you tear a ligament in your knee or something,
yep.
You finish the interval, your knee's still gonna hurt.
Yes.
That's pain. Versus discomfort.
I like that.
So, you know, like, and that's why cramping, like you can't, like if you're actually cramping, you can't just like shut up legs.
Yeah.
Like you can tell shut up legs to like,
you can tell that to discomfort. Yeah. You can't tell that to pain.
Yeah. So it's, and think of RPE as just another metric. And I think this helps a lot.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be cool if that was on your Garmin? Yeah. If that was a field?
Yeah, because it's just another metric, you know? Like, a lot of times when we feel like crap, we think we're crap. We think the world's ending. We think everything sucks and it's miserable. And if you can kind of think of it more objectively, like, kind of like I was thinking about it. It's like, you know, you can be riding along. You're like, okay, I'm doing 200 watts. It's 80 degrees outside. The wind is from the north at 6 miles an hour.
My heart rate is this.
My heart rate's 140. And my RP is about 8.5 right now. You know,
you'd be like, a better bike racer.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. It stings, but yeah, that's kind of what it is. And
oof, there you go. Yeah. So feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that really affects RPE is kind of like if there's a mismatch between your expectation and how things are actually going.
Yes.
You know, if it's a positive difference, your RP is probably going to be lower.
Yep.
If it's negative, your RP is going to be higher.
Yep.
You know, and so confidence, and we did a podcast. We talked a lot about confidence, but confidence is interesting because it really needs to be based in reality, and it needs to be based on your experience. It's like too high and too low
are both bad. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, too high, you're more likely to have that mismatch between expectations and reality, but too low, you're leaving potential on the table.
And you're being miserable all the time. Just to throw something out.
And like thinking you're worse than you are is majorly going to increase your RPE.
It's a weird choice to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so like winning kind of puts you in an upward spiral.
Yeah.
You know, like riders that are having success, it's easy for them to replicate that success.
Success begets success. This is true in every facet of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like an example is like when Bannister broke the 4 minute mile or something.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, tons everybody of people could. They knew it was possible. You know? Yeah. Like if you have success, like if you win a race, you're more likely to win another race because you know it's possible, you know? And so wins are powerful. But with bike racing, you know, you got 70 racers, only one person comes in first place. We need to really kind of like redefine what winning is. And, you know,
I don't think being married to a win is a good goal for 99% of riders. And this is maybe, I genuinely think this is a hot take. It's definitely a hot take among people who have podcasts that like being married to the top of the podium is usually an actively bad choice.
And I definitely agree. I think there's about like, so there's like 72 racers in each group or whatever. Like there should be 72 different definitions of what a win is.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. But you know, like find a lot of wins out on the race course, you know, like you do awesome getting up that 30 second climb. That's a win. Go find another win. You know, just wins beget wins. The one thing that just really, we haven't talked about for a while, but I do notice that there's this trend, and it's mostly with our girl riders because they're
more mature.
Yeah. Well, just better people basically. they write TBY on their legs, and it just really means so much to me when I see people do that.
And really quick, not to cut you off. TBY for, and you, most people on the team should have heard of this, but just as a quick refresher.
Well, it stands for the best you, but what it really kind of means is my definition of TBY is you're addressing the difference between where you're currently at and your potential, and you're not worrying about other people's.
Yes.
You know, and there's a quote by Steve Magnus that says, toughness is embracing what we are and what we have to do. And so TBY is just kind of acknowledging where you're at and what you need to do to become what you want to be, you know? And so like if a race isn't going well, you need to kind of just like turn on the blinders, not worry about other people, not worry about what they're thinking about you, and just dig deep and give it your absolute best shot. You know, sometimes it kind of means that like a race isn't going to be a race anymore. It's going to be more like a Strava segment where you're just time trialing and just trying to get your best absolute time. And it could also mean, you know, say you're like winning a race and you're winning the race by a full minute. TBY would make it so you'd win that by 2 minutes.
Yeah. You
know? So,
well, it brings to mind a story. I think I've talked a little bit about Alex Dowsett. It's one of my favorite road pros. He retired a couple of years ago. And he wrote a book that I'm sure was ghostwritten or whatever, like most pro athlete books, but it actually had some really good stuff in it. He told a story about one of his very first professional races with Livestrong was the Tour of Oman or something. And it was his first ever world tour level stage race. And he was, you know, 19, 20 years old, like really young. And he said he found himself in the breakaway and was kind of freaking out. He's like, this is my first time ever doing this. I'm in the breakaway. We're gaining. This isn't right. I shouldn't be here. Like I'm making a mistake. I feel good and I'm here, but there's no way this is right. I'm going to back it off. And he backed it off and went back to the group. The group he was with ended up getting to the finish. And he said he knew he was a better sprinter than those other two people. And he said, it's really hard to like, and I think most of us probably won't find ourselves in this situation, but you know, the flip side of this is like, if you're having that especially bad day, like you said, dig deep, keep going. But then remember too, that like, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you're surprised by how well you're doing, go with it. You know, because like you said, I think some kids, and I worry that some kids maybe by virtue of being farther along the puberty journey than others, or just kind of being in a different category or in a certain region or certain circumstances might just, or like kind of find themselves like winning races all the time. You know, we've seen this before with a few kids who just win every race they do, and then they transition to varsity, and then all of a sudden, you know. Something that somebody told me one time is there's always a category you'll lose in, and there's always a category you'll win in, you know? And so like, remember to put yourself in the context of like, even the kids who win varsity, man, they go to nationals and there's some stiff competition. Even if you're winning nationals, you go to a World Cup, there's stiff competition, you know, like.
I can't imagine the category I'd win in.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's like, you know, like the little rippers or whatever, or little shredders at the I Cup where their moms follow them around the course. I'm sure you'd be in contention for sure. Yeah. But you know, like no matter what side of it you're on, giving your, like, there's a lot of kids where I'm like, wow, you only won by 30 seconds. Were you trying today? You know, and then there's other people where I'm like, you know what, dude, you finished. Bravo. That's amazing, right?
Yeah. So if things are going bad and you're behind, keep pushing. If things are going well and you're ahead, keep pushing.
Keep pushing.
Just don't ever stop pushing. Yeah. Like, there's never really a good reason to stop pushing. Because, you know, you think about this whole thing we're doing, you know, like becoming the state champ, like what does that really mean? Like in the grand scheme of things, like nothing. You probably won't even get a free bike out of it, you know, or you're not going to get any money out of it, you know. But really this sport is just kind of a chance to see what we can do, you know, see what we're capable of and take whatever we start with and make so much more out of it, you know. And that's really kind of what this is all about, you know, and that just translates into your life as a whole, you know, because I always say if you can pull off a cross country start, pretty much anything else in your life is going to be easy, and you might as well just go do something big, you know.
So. No, but I love your point there that like this should be about making you better, and that like I don't know if this is like maybe a difference culturally here, but I don't think winning is everything. Winning in and of itself, I think, is great, and it's what I want to see, and I love seeing it, but winning in and of itself isn't the goal, you know. There are I Cup categories I could enter and win.
Yeah. Well, and right? we've like, talked about this before where, like, what does a win mean? And
right.
We had a whole conversation.
Yeah, and this isn't new. But, like, and I don't want to, like, diminish it because we have a lot of winners on our team. And I love that. And I love that culture, too. But I don't think you need to be first place to win. And I know that kind of sounds like
successful.
That sounds like a 90s cliche, like everyone's a winner, but like not everyone's a winner. 100%. Some people don't come in first and they're not winners. Like I've seen people have horrible attitudes and be douchebags on the trail in 48th place. What a fascinating question, Dan. No, but like I've seen this. We talked about like that snowboard I Cup.
That question.
Yeah, I know, right? We talked about the snowboard I Cup where I was just so thoroughly unimpressed by that kid who passed leading the race, and I was so glad when Justin beat him, because I was like, wow, you were a jerk. I even if you'd won, you know, I don't care, because what did you do on the way there? So yeah,
so
coming from two people who have won a ton of bike races between the two of us, winning isn't everything, so there's some bias there too, but yeah. you know
I think what we talked about before, where you know you got to decide what you consider a win, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's a whole bunch of different ways to win out there. So
yeah,
just dig deep, give it your all, finish happy.
Yep.
So yeah, that was our topic. I do have some slightly unrelated closing thoughts that I just wanted to share.
Mm.
You know, for you know, for most people, this is probably the last race of the season, unless you're doing Frog Hollow.
Frog Hollow or Cross, basically, the only,
which is about half the team that does that. So never mind. But anyhow, I want you to just take some time to think about a big, awesome, scary goal for next season. Because I think sometimes, you know, when you finish your last big event of the season, sometimes you kind of get in a little bit of a funk. You know, you don't really have...
It's the purposelessness.
Yeah, you know. So I'd start thinking of something big and awesome that you'd like to try to accomplish next year. When you think about it, what it is, let me know. You know, I'd like to hear what people are...
I'd love to read off a bunch. If you guys could just provide us with what they are, maybe just to give some people ideas.
You know, whether it's like Point to Point or Leadville or...
I'm going to do this route for the first time.
Like a KOM that you want to get or something. Or...
And it could be, and again, like we've talked a lot about the kind of in like alternative events, like make your own. I'm going to do Five Canyons and I want to do it in this time. Or I'm going to ride from here to... Moab on all trails or something, you know, come up with some cool and interesting stuff. And, you know, I'd also love just to throw this out in the universe. I don't know if I actually have the time to do it, but like, I'd love to have more social media presence with this stuff. If you're going to do something cool, if you're doing a Zwifting Everest, like, let me know. We'll throw that up in the Instagram. I think that's cool to kind of put this stuff out there.
Winter, just so you know,
that'd be a cool, like a team Everest Zwifting day. You could do like a half Everest and a full Everest for the people who want to do
it. Like a Lone Peak or something.
A Lone Peak. There you go. Yeah, like keep, and you know, like for me this year, it was Point to Point, and having that in the back of my mind was helpful. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting when it was over. I was like, oh,
now
okay.
What?
Okay. You know, now what? Right. Yeah. So yeah, be thinking about that again. It doesn't have to be a race. Doesn't have to be Point to Point or Crusher or States.
It has to be something that would push you and
something that scares you
to stretch you
that you're not sure if you want to do. Cause it's a little scary.
That was my first kind of unrelated thought. The second one, and we'll talk a lot more about this, but be sure, and this is really important, and I know this is important from experience, because I see what happens when this gets neglected. But before you start training again, for whether it's cycling or skimo or Nordic skiing or running, after sometime after State or after Frog Hollow, take a good solid 2 weeks off. Take a proper off season. And by off season, I mean recover the same way you would if you're trying to get over a sickness. Just
don't go do a bunch of hikes. Yeah. We're not talking off the bike time. You're talking physical recovery time.
I just know that if this gets neglected, you pay for it during your Nika season. It like almost takes a while for neglecting that to show its ugly head, but it does show later in the season. So really you just need that deep recovery reset period. We'll talk a lot more about it. I'm just kind of throwing it out there. While we hopefully still have a captive audience after, well, this is a long one.
128.
Yeah. Sorry guys. But yeah, that's basically all I have. Again, thanks everyone for all your hard work this season. It's just so cool knowing you guys and being your friends and being able to ride with you. And I'm inspired by just the athleticism of these youth athletes is just amazing. It's just awe-inspiring to watch how fast these kids can ride and how quickly they can improve and how much fun they can have. And so, yeah, thanks for letting me be part of it.
Yeah, you'll probably hear us one more time before States, maybe.
Maybe. I've actually got a fun idea. We want to do a Halloween episode. I don't know if we'll do that next.
Hopefully you'll hear us again before States. If we don't, best of luck. Go out and do what you do. If I could give one parting thought, really quick, like you guys have worked hard to develop some amount of competency at this and you should be proud of that. And like States, I think some of you are maybe especially nervous. You're going to go out and you're going to do what you do. And you've tried if you've never done this and you expect to go and win, you're in for a rude awakening. But I know that the people who listen to this podcast are the people who've been working hard all year. Whatever number is next to your name on the website that you're going to drastically refresh until the results pop up after, you know, that's not unimportant, but you know, go out and do what you do. You've earned the right to feel good about whatever your performance is, as long as you try your best.
Should we do a magic word?
Yes. Ooh.
How about breathe?
Breathe. breathe is funny. Nope, not funny, but it works. We're going to do it. Breathe, but you have to spell it slightly incorrect.
No, you have to make it really long.
You have to make it really long and throw in a few spelling errors.
No, just make it really long.
Throw in spelling errors.
Make it long.
Throw in spelling errors. Do both. Okay. If we don't talk to you guys until next time around, go out and do what you do. Thank you guys for listening. We broke the 90-minute mark, so it's one of those episodes. We appreciate you guys sticking with us. Ride safe, and we will talk to you soon.